What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Tensions rising on elite college campuses, pro-Palestinian protests, brazen anti-Semitism, over 100 arrests, New York City Rabbi David Ingber on campus safety at Columbia and beyond.
The toxicity and the level of infection in our elite academic institutions is remarkable.
Plus, a Columbia Business School donor weighs in on the chaos, investor Leon Cooperman.
May the college kids have shit for brains. Forgive me for my language.
And two-time Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, the biggest hurdles for today's economy.
Does raising the interest rates actually address the problem? And what should be our target?
All that today, and Elon Musk's tiff with the Australian Prime Minister over censoring, or not, a post on X.
What shouldn't you be able to see? Should you be able to see everything?
It's Tuesday, April 23rd. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And here we go. Let's take a look at the U.S. equity futures.
Free Palestine.
While there is hysteria about anti-Semitism on Columbia and Barnard's campus, the actual fact is there's systematic and institutional repression of students who are trying to fight a genocidal war against Muslims and against Palestinians.
If there's any student, Jewish or whoever, that's been assaulted or wants to make a police report or wants to talk to the police, we encourage them to call 911.
You're a paid protester. You mean nothing. You believe in nothing.
We want to talk about the escalating tensions on college campuses because last night, officials at NYU asked the NYPD to remove protesters from its campus. School officials said the pro-Palestinian protests had not been authorized and it had asked police to enforce trespassing violations. Students and faculty were among those arrested. Overnight in Columbia University, they announced that the classes for the rest of the semester would be hybrid, allowing remote attendance when possible. Comes as billionaire donors are rethinking their support of Columbia over pro-Palestinian protests that have included violent and anti-Semitic rhetoric. In a statement, Patriots owner Robert Kraft, who's a Columbia alumnus, saying he's not comfortable supporting the university until corrective action is taken. When asked if he would follow Kraft's lead in pausing his support, Columbia donor Leon Cooperman saying, I can't say that yet. He said he doesn't hold the administration responsible for demonstrations, said that the kids are, quote, out of control. Cooperman will join us to talk about those protests, his donations, and other plans.
And we're watching shares of Apple this morning. Bloomberg reporting that iPhone sales in China fell 19% during the March quarter, citing an independent research firm. That'd be the worst performance in China since COVID struck back in 2020. And the report said that Apple fell to third place in that market, behind local brands Vivo and Honor. And it's roughly on par with the resurgent rival, if you're familiar with, Huawei. Business has been tougher for Apple in China since Beijing restricted foreign devices and state-backed firms and government agencies. Kind of a retaliatory move.
Retaliatory move for what?
I don't know. Something we're doing
Huawei
here.
Or for TikTok, which, by the way, every social media company from the United States is banned in China and has been for 10 years.
When does TikTok, even if this happens, go away? I hear that it's just never going away.
Depends
just
on how you believe it'll work. It could very well, if you read the bill, it's very possible that it would sit on your phone and just never be updated or upgraded. So ostensibly, but I think it would devolve
after a weird thing.
Three to five months, I would think.
It could be gone that quick.
Well, no, when you say gone, it's not. It's just that they have to actually take it off the phone. That's the crazy part. It's that they can't update it. So at some point, it will go to other.
So it's listening to you right now. It doesn't know whether it likes you or not, right?
Possible, but I don't. As you know, I don't believe any of these things are even happening.
You don't.
No.
Why don't you think it happens?
I think this is all. To the extent that TikTok is a national security threat, it is only a national security threat prospectively, meaning I do not believe that they are actually using the data in some kind of nefarious way today. I don't think they've not shown us any evidence that
they have said that they will not cooperate with the Chinese government, but there is no Chinese company that can not cooperate with the Chinese government. Just ask Jack Ma.
No, but my only point is that it's only a national security threat if you actually think that they are trying to participate in election
interference. And there's no reason to think that any of our college kids are being, influenced in some nefarious way. They're all acting so well right now.
Sure, I just don't think it's
just not TikTok.
By the way, it may be a function of TikTok, but it's not because TikTok has built the algorithm to do this to...
People who argue the other side of that. Ted Cruz, some of our guests, one who may come back.
Yes, none of whom have shown any evidence whatsoever that's actually the case.
Elon Musk lashing out at Australia's prime minister early this morning after a court ordered his social media company X to take down footage of an alleged terrorist attack in Sydney. X had already blocked posts from users in Australia. Showed a violent knife attack, but Australia is ordering X to take down the content globally. And Australia's prime minister called Musk an arrogant billionaire who thinks he's above the law. And in a post, Musk said, does the PM think that he should have jurisdiction all over the earth? Musk said that no country should be allowed to censor content for all countries.
I think I have to agree with him on that.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it either.
But if other countries want it taken down, they should have the jurisdiction over that too.
I did see, on another note, a cool video of Alec Baldwin. Did you watch that?
No.
He's in a Starbucks. And what does it take to make Alec Baldwin look like a good guy and sort of a sympathetic character? It takes a lot, and he actually does on this. You should check it out. But there's a person that keeps saying, harassing Alec Baldwin in the Starbucks, say, Palestine needs to be freed. Palestine is free. Palestine is free. And he kept saying it. The Starbucks employees try to get the person, and the person that's saying it is filming Alec Baldwin.
Right.
And so Alec Baldwin's trying to get away, and the employees are trying to get, the person that's filming is not ordering anything at Starbucks. So Alec Baldwin ignores him. Finally, he's walking out, and the guy approaches him, and all you see is boom, and it looks like Alec Baldwin just slaps the phone out of the guy's hands, and now it's like an assault, or Alec Baldwin in the past has had his temper sort of, right. But I was on his side, so that's what it takes to get to the point where I was sympathetic. Will you watch it now? Yesterday I gave you a good one. Then you didn't care when I told you about it, but then when Bill Ackman retweeted it, you wanted to watch the SNL.
No, I just hadn't seen it.
I asked you to, and you weren't looking it up, but then Bill Ackman retweets it, and all of a sudden it's like you're telling your friends about it. But that's how it happened.
That's not what happened.
Okay. I'm still wondering what it should be on. How violent, what shouldn't you be able to see? Should you be able to see everything? I mean, like a bloody knife attack? Is that something?
I don't want to see it, but I don't think the Prime Minister of Australia has the right to say it's
globally.
Gotta be censored globally. I think every nation has its own right to what's going to be shown in its territory.
Sometimes you can't help what you see. It happens and it's already too late. Can't unsee.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, elite university campuses are at a boiling point across the U.S. In New York, Columbia students are protesting, and some Jewish students are going home to feel safe. New York City Rabbi David Ingber joins us.
This is not an issue of free speech. People are not protesting a political stance vis-a-vis Israel and vis-a-vis the Palestinians, advocating for sovereignty. They're essentially calling for the genocide of Jews who live in Israel and Israelis.
We'll be right back.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway,
The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome back. This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Elite college campuses across the country have become a flashpoint for division in response to the Israel-Hamas war. Police have arrested dozens of students at pro-Palestinian demonstrations at Yale and NYU, and over 100 students were arrested on Columbia's campus on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. These arrests have not stopped the unrest. This past weekend, tensions and anti-Semitic chants escalated at a pro-Palestinian encampment on campus at Columbia. A video of an activist yelling that, quote, October 7th would be every day, went viral.
Never forget the 7th of October!
That will happen!
Never forget the 7th of October!
Not one more time! Not five more times! Not 10 more times! Not 100 more times! Not 1,000 more times! Not 10,000 times!
In response, the university's president announced that all classes would be held virtually on Monday as a, quote, reset. And a chance to de-escalate. Prompted by safety concerns, a school rabbi messaged Jewish students, encouraging them to go home to avoid potential danger. New York Governor Kathy Hochul called the harassment and rhetoric on campus vile and abhorrent. The city's mayor, Eric Adams, spoke out too, along with the White House, which called the chaos unconscionable and dangerous. With that, let's get back to Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Joining us right now for his take on all this and what comes next, Rabbi David Ingber, founding rabbi of Renewal Synagogue, Ramamu, and he's the senior director for Jewish Life and the senior director of the Brofman Center at Manhattan's 92nd Street Y. Good morning to you. I think we're all just trying to understand what, first of all, what we think has even happened over the weekend and what you've seen, given your proximity to it all.
Yeah, so my proximity is not only because my synagogue is in that neighborhood, but also I have congregants who are members of the faculty at Columbia University. I have family members who attend Columbia University. So I'm hearing firsthand, and we're receiving firsthand videos, from my niece on our WhatsApp group. So I'm seeing it, and it's around me. It's also I live in that neighborhood, so I'm seeing it on the streets.
Right.
It's unbelievable. I mean, just for our viewers to know, like about 75 blocks from here, there are people chanting that October 7th and the massacre of Jews, the pogrom that took place on October 7th, they're saying it's not going to happen once or 10 times. It's going to happen a thousand times.
Twice we've said we want to tone down the rancor. I mean, that is soft. So someone is going to get hurt or killed at one of these.
I mean, what the president said about there being a reset is absurd. We don't need a reset. We need absolute consequences and enforcement. And the university essentially brought in the NYPD in order to do kind of like to clear the encampment. But of course, it's just a small gesture.
So
it's not safe on campus for Jewish students.
What do you think is happening, therefore, from an administrative level at this university? We've seen this at other universities, but what do you think is happening at Columbia right now? We were talking before, Columbia Business School, one of the most famous business schools in the country. Warren Buffett's a famous alumni, Henry Kravis. I mean, there's a whole long list. Where is the pressure point on these universities for there to be some kind of meaningful change?
So I don't know. I'm not in those backdoor conversations, but it's a little bit appalling, and it should appall all of us, that it took a congressional hearing in order to get the president of Columbia University to begin some small gesture of disciplinary action towards tenured professors who reveled and who spoke in what took place on October 7th. I mean, this is the toxicity and the level of infection in our elite right. academic institutions is remarkable.
Explain
it's just remarkable.
This is different from free speech, because I think that's where a lot of people get confused. Free speech and protests on campus yeah. are one thing. What is different that's happening?
Again, so I'm not a lawyer. I can't actually, you know,
no,
legally,
just from
I'm
what
not
you've
sure.
Seen. But what, you've
but
seen
what we've seen different. Is that this is not an issue of free speech. People are not protesting a political stance vis-a-vis Israel and vis-a-vis the Palestinians, advocating for sovereignty. They are actually they're essentially calling for the genocide of Jews who live in Israel and Israelis. They're physically intimidating students. Students don't feel safe. Right. We already read from the beginning that one of the rabbis in Columbia University said that students in 2024 have to leave Columbia's campus, the Upper West Side of Manhattan, in order to be safe on Passover. The irony of this is so thick, we should actually be bowling over. Right. I mean, Passover is a holiday that celebrates the Jewish liberation in the face of Egyptians that were trying to murder them and that enslaved them for 400 years and so on. And here we are, 2024. You know, we have the libel against Jews, that they use the blood of Christians was a common trope right. in Europe around Passover, that we'd make matzah with blood. And here we are in 2024 at the bastion right. of our elite institutions telling Jews that unless they go home, they're not safe. And right. I know personally from my niece, who is at home now, we know students are terrified. And they've been bullied, they've been harassed, right. they've been spit at. It's a terrible scene.
Here's my question to you, Rabbi. And the reason why I mentioned the business leaders,
yeah.
because historically they have had influence over these universities.
Sure.
Last night, CNBC made calls to a number of business leaders, alumni, on the board of and connected to this university, Columbia.
Sure.
And to a man, nothing.
Right.
Zero. No comment, no statement. We don't want to say anything.
Shame.
And we can take Columbia out of this. But more broadly, and I've had a number of conversations with CEOs
sure.
about this, who all say, I can only talk to you, Andrew, off the record. I yeah. don't want to talk to you on the record about this. I can't say anything publicly. I fear that my employees are going to come for me.
Sure.
I fear that
right.
the customers who are
sure.
against this are going to come for me. What do you tell those people who are watching right now
yeah.
on this issue?
Well, this is a time for moral clarity and for moral courage. You know, one of the great things about the story of Passover is that in order for the Israelites to become free, God gave them a test. They said, take the God of Egypt and bring it into your home, and that will become the Paschal offering. Sacrifice, right, the God of Egypt. The Israelites at the time said, that's too scary. That's terrifying. How do we bring the God of Egypt into our home and sacrifice? And that forever becomes the emblem of what Passover stands for, which is the courage to do the scary and risky thing, right? You want to be free? If we're speaking about liberal values, we're speaking about this country, it's really remarkable to see how leadership here is so right. wanting.
Let me
right?
ask you
Mayor
so.
Adams
is there a
things,
way to stand
you know,
up?
Governor Hochul and Mayor Adams are more vocal. And the White right. House, which has already issued three statements on anti-Semitism thus far, has more moral courage than Columbia University's leadership and other elite universities' leadership. That's appalling.
Okay, so explain this. Is there a way to stand up for Jewish people and against anti-Semitism and at the same time potentially disagree with the approach that Israel has taken as it relates to Gaza?
Of course there is. Of course there is. If peaceful protest is something that is guaranteed, right, by our Constitution guarantees that right to each and every one of us. But we're not talking about peaceful protests. Go to NYU now, where encampments are also happening. Go and visit Columbia University. Try
right.
to see.
By the way, it's happening in Yale. I think we have live video
protest.
Of that literally right now.
Absolutely.
Physically, as we're
Absolutely.
Having this conversation.
And you can make a case that anything Israel is doing right now is the stated intention of making it safe for people that are in those areas so that this never happens again.
Right.
And the gauntlet was thrown down not by Israel. So I could make a case against what you're saying that they should be taking a different approach.
I'm suggesting there is clearly disagreement over
Absolutely.
The approach Israel is
but
taking.
The other
what
thing,
I'm suggesting is
the
there should
thing,
be a way.
There is
should
a way.
Be a way.
There is a way.
Actually
and
be able to have that
right,
debate
and that
without
is not
having
happened.
It around.
Right.
And some of these feckless CEOs, I almost said something worse than that. Some of these feckless CEOs are perfectly willing to speak out on gender misidentification
Absolutely.
Within there and all these left-wing tropes
Correct.
that they've taken hostage where you can get canceled, and they won't speak out on this. Yeah. It's disgusting.
The double standardism vis-a-vis Jewish, and you know, the persecution of Jews or the way that protest is happening is just glaringly obvious. And certainly to answer your question, Andrew, and to all of your viewers, of course, to be able to disagree with the government or with a policy is one thing. But for those who are using libelous terms like genocide and ethnic cleansing, which are completely inaccurate and not true, but ironically also supporting Hamas, we have people who are saying, holding up signs next to Jewish protesters, pro-Israel protesters, that says, next Qassam rockets or Hamas rockets target these students, these people.
Right.
These are protests on campus, and the university administration has done nothing about that.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, it's small measures, right? Token measures, right? The token measures from Columbia University's president is shameful.
Okay.
And the fact that it took Congress.
I got one that you will either think is very easy or very hard.
Yeah.
And this happened after some of the issues were emerged at Harvard. Bill Ackman and a number of other people came out and said, you know what? If you're engaged in this kind of activity, we would never hire you. You would be blacklisted from our companies. And then you had Larry Summers and others come out and say, you know what? These are young people who don't know any better. We shouldn't give them a hard time on this issue. What does the rabbi say from a moral perspective?
No, it's clear that there have to be consequences for this behavior. I mean, moving forward, steps that we should be taking, the president of the university should be expelling students that are engaged in anti-Semitic activity, expelling and firing professors whose social media accounts have the celebration of Hamas's attacks and that the vile support for those activities. It's not resistance to murder men, women, and children, and so on. And going forward, business leaders should be penalizing employees. Google is an example.
Just did it.
Google
right.
just did that, 28 of their employees, right? It's a great thing. We have Alexander Karp, right,
who's
also
from
Palantir. So we have examples of the business world holding these universities and its students to an account. And I think ultimately, as someone said, I think brilliantly, you know, this is really a great case study in marketing going forward, marketing courses on how elite universities lose brand equity, right? The product at these universities is suspicious. It is subject going forward. Right. And the business world should actually use those consequences to help make a change happen in those universities.
Rabbi, thank you for coming in this morning.
Absolutely. It's Passover, so I'm hoping for safety for all people, and especially for Jews up at Columbia University. The last thing I want to say is to the Jewish students there, we should be banding together. I know that the instinct here is to go home, and I want to say that we, as with our allies, and there are plenty of them, we should be banding together to make Columbia University and all universities safe for Jews and for all people.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
The scene at Columbia has captured national headlines as tensions rise on other campuses as well. Our team spoke to one Columbia Business School alumnus who estimates that he has donated more than $50 million to the school since his time there, famed investor Leon Cooperman. He's the son of Polish-Jewish immigrants. Cooperman grew up in the Bronx and has never minced words.
What's going on the campuses reminds me a little bit about the Vietnam War demonstrations. Okay. It's the responsibility of the university to create a safe welcoming environment. And for many universities, including Columbia, they failed in doing that. But they're catching on. And right now, I think they're trying to do the right things. And it's a very sad situation. A competitive network about 3 or 4 months ago, I said many of the college kids have shit for brains. Forgive me for my language, but I grew up in the Bronx. You know, when that was more of a accepted terminology. And when I say that, let me explain what I mean. A lot of these kids are chanting from the river to the sea, free Palestine. They're advocating for the destruction of Israel. What is Israel? Israel is the only reliable ally the United States has in the Middle East, is the only democracy in the Middle East, is the only country in the Middle East that allows gays and lesbians to practice what they want to practice. And when I see a group that say gays for Palestine, I kind of laugh at how crazy they are. Because if it was up to these other countries in the Middle East, they would be beheaded and killed.
Part of the argument, though, is not just that these younger people who have this perspective on their own, but have this perspective because they were taught this to some degree at these universities.
My whole life has been trying to pick winners in the market. So in the nonprofit world, I try to give my money to winners, whether it's Harlem Children's Zone, whether it's Robin Hood, you know, and, you know, in the academic environment, I've tried to give money to those schools that, you know, have made a difference to me in my lifetime. I don't think it's right, you know, but I probably couldn't have gotten into Wall Street from Hunter College, where I got my undergraduate degree. I got an MBA from Columbia, and the very next day I joined Goldman Sachs. I had 25 very enjoyable, close to 25 very enjoyable years there. And I feel a debt of gratitude to Columbia, and I've been giving them money. My only change, frankly, is I've specified that my giving must stay within the business school. I did not go to Columbia undergraduate. I went to Hunter College undergraduate. But we're going through difficult times.
As it stands now, the pro-Palestinian encampment is still in place on Columbia's campus. On Monday night, as Passover began, students on site observed the holiday with symbols from both religious traditions. And next on Squawk Pod.
It's nice to have a Nobel Prize winner at the table.
Nice to be here.
Columbia Business School's Joseph Stiglitz on inequality, the economy, and his surprising take on what might make us successful.
A little higher inflation would actually be good for the economy.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, cue.
You're watching Squawk Box on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Our next guest is here to weigh in on the state of the economy, the Fed, and so much more. I want to bring in two-time Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz. He's, of course, the former CEA chair, former World Bank chief economist. He's now professor at Columbia University, chief economist with the Roosevelt Institute. And he's got a new book out. It is called The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society. And today is publication day, so congratulations. It's nice to have a Nobel Prize winner at the table.
Nice to be here.
I want to talk about this book, and I want to talk about the freedom you talk about in the economy. But I want to talk actually for just a moment about our current economy. In this book, you also talk about taxes and the like and wealth taxes and what it means to be free and have a free economy. But I'm curious what you think about inflation, current inflation, and how you think about that in terms of the freedom of our economy and the tax that exists on our economy today.
Well, we brought inflation down a lot. And the key issue back in the years immediately after the pandemic was what was generating this
right
kind of inflation we hadn't had for almost a half a century. And to me, there were a lot of debate about it. And to me, the underlying source, if you look very carefully at where, what sectors the inflation in it was in, where it was very clear. It was a supply side shortage generated by the pandemic. It was the war in Ukraine. It was demand shifts. Remember the pandemic,
right?
People wanted to live in different places,
yep,
and house prices where they wanted to live went
right
up. And all that was the underlying source of the inflation. And therefore, the Fed's response of just raising interest rates wasn't getting at that underlying source, and in some ways made things worse.
So you think it was a mistake for the Fed to increase interest rates?
I think it was a good thing that they normalized interest rates. You know, the zero interest rates that
right
we had since 2008, the cost of capital shouldn't be zero.
Do you think it should stay at where it is today?
No.
What would you do if you were?
I think what they should have done is raise it to a more normal level, 3.5%, and then increase it beyond that much more cautiously than they did. And the implication of that is that where it is today, they ought to be moving it down. It distorts the economy. not only here at home, but globally, when you have such
But you still have you have persistent inflation. I mean, look, Jason Furman's made the argument that if, in fact, the Fed lowers interest rates this calendar year, it is likely because we actually have an employment problem or an unemployment problem rather than a true inflation, you know, that inflation's actually coming down.
Well, you know, go back to, does raising the interest rates actually address the problem? And what should be our target? Now, remember, in terms of target, 2% number, that was pulled out of thin air.
Right.
There was no economic science behind that. No economic science says how fast you should go back to whatever goal, arbitrary
and
as
you
it
think
is.
The credibility of the Fed matters? Doesn't matter? Does that 2% target matter?
The credibility of the Fed should be based on overall, are we keeping inflation within guardrails?
Right.
And everybody realizes that we don't have runaway inflation. We're not Argentina. You know, we have a stable economic system.
It's insidious long term. It can be insidious long term if it were to stay at 4 or 5% year after year.
If it started getting higher and higher, that would be, you're absolutely right. That would be insidious.
And it compounds.
But if it comes down to 5-4 and then it's drifting down to 3 and 2, that's
but like
fine.
Over 10 years, you look at what the dollar's worth. If it was, let's say, 4% instead of 3%, it's an actual difference over.
No.
Over, you don't think?
No, no, really.
Do you know Road to Freedom is Arthur
yes.
Brooks's? This was not in response to an Arthur Brooks book because it's almost the opposite of all your remedies. His is based, and I think you read it.
Remember, I
paid you entrepreneurship, personal responsibility, upward mobility. And less government and more private sector and more. It's weird that it has the same name. So there must be, it must have diverse. There must have, you must, it, well, look, when, you get, when you get to a fork, take it, I think they say.
Let me explain why a little higher inflation overall would actually be good for the economy. Because what we have, what we've observed for a long time, is what we call downward rigidities.
Right.
Very hard to get wages to fall.
Right.
And when you're going, an economy going through, you know, big structural change like we're going through, AI, the green transition, then you need to move labor, capital from one place to another. What guides that movement is changes in the relative prices.
Mm.
And when you can have more movement in that relative prices, which you can do with downward rigidity if you have a little bit higher inflation target, gives you a lot of better ability to move resources without high unemployment.
Let me ask you two very quick questions about this book. You write the following about economic freedom. You say that phrase is even misunderstood because you say that right now we don't take into account both sides of that freedom. You say the freedom to harm others, for example, or the freedom not to be harmed. Too often we have not balanced the equities well. Gun owners versus victims of gun violence, chemical companies versus the millions who suffer from toxic pollution, monopolistic drug companies versus patients who die or whose health worsens because they can't afford to buy medicine. And my question to you about that, about this balance issue, is if we were more cautious on one side, on all of those issues that you just described, and I think there's folks who would like us to be more cautious, what happens on the other? Meaning there's an argument made, I think less so with guns, but let's go do it with medicine, that you want people doing, you know, new innovative things in science on medicine because of the lives that could be saved. And how do we think about that balance?
Yeah, you're right. These are very hard questions of these balances. In some cases, I point out in the book, it's pretty obvious. Which is more important, the rights of the exploiter or the rights of the exploited?
Right.
But the kind of cases that you mentioned are the hardest. And that's where economics comes really to bear. What is the process by which most drugs get produced?
Right.
And think about the most important one we've had in recent years, the vaccine that protected all of us against COVID-19. That was almost all funded by government. Government funded the basic research that created the mRNA platform.
Right.
And government funded most of the work then going from that mRNA platform to the vaccine. And the last mile was done by the private sector. They would have done that if their profits had been one-tenth of what they actually got.
I want to thank you. The book is called The Road to Freedom. I know we don't have time, but I'm just going to ask you in 30 seconds, because you are at Columbia right now, do you support this administration and everything that's happening?
What I've been seeing up the part business school where I am,
right,
things are very quiet.
Okay.
The conflict that we're seeing here really illustrates many of the issues that I talk about in my book.
Okay.
There are conflicts here between different rights,
right,
the right to, to speech, the right to assembly, the right not to be discriminated against. So there are those balancing,
right,
and there are rights of differing students. And bringing those together, right, in the book, I give a framework,
right,
for doing that. The problem is, this is a moment of passion. My book calls for a reason, and it's very difficult to get that kind of reasoning that we need, right, in this moment of passion.
It's called The Road to Freedom. Joseph Stiglitz, thank you very much. Very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that is Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And tell us what you think. If you listen to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts, would you be so kind as to rate this podcast or even write a short review? That helps other listeners discover Squawk Pod. That's it. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.